The echoing chime brings us together and centers us. Whoever you are, wherever you've come from, whomever you love, we welcome you here. I'm the Reverend Anya Johnston, and I'm pleased to be working with my worship associate, Becky Klein, today. Dave Clemens was scheduled to be part of the service this morning, and like so many people I've met since moving to Ohio, he's sick. So I would like to change that pattern for folks around here, but I can't do much. We like a variety of people in our congregation, in our world. We like a variety of voices in our worship on Sundays. Across the country, every Sunday morning, chalices are kindled in the spirit of coming together as Unitarian Universalists. The chalice typically has these two circles. I like to think one is our universal heart, one is our universalist spirit. And as the flame arises, we find ourselves together once again.
Life is full of storms, meteorological storms, personal storms, and storms of relationships, politics, and society. Our ability to survive and once again to thrive is woven with threads of determination, strength, and courage, and the wisdom to know when to take risks and when to wait out the storm. Storms create vulnerability and often feelings of confusion, and fear, hurt, anger, or grief. Our hope is to come through the storms intact and ready to grow again. In her poem, Hurricane, Mary Oliver reflects on a personal storm, the loss of her 40-plus years partner, and this very hope. It didn't behave like anything you had ever imagined. The wind tore at the trees, the rain fell for days, slant and hard, the back of the hand to everything. I watched the trees bow and their leaves fall and crawl back into the earth, as though that was that. This was one hurricane I lived through. The other one was of a different sort and lasted longer. Then I felt my own leaves giving up and falling, the back of the hand to everything. But listen now what happened to the actual trees. Toward the end of that summer, they pushed new leaves from their stubbed limbs. It was the wrong season, yes, but they couldn't stop. They looked like telephone poles and didn't care. And after the leaves came blossoms. For some things, there are no wrong seasons, which is what I dream of for me. As we too seek to survive the storms of our lives in ways that allow us to grow new leaves and to blossom, come, let us worship.
You have the light of love inside you. We have the light of love inside us. It's bigger than any one of us. Some call it God. May we remember how we can bless the world in its sorrows, horrors, and pain. May we remember how we bless each other by our presence, our compassion, and our love. May we go into the world carrying and shining the strength that we gather together in our community and from our connection to the light that shines from within. We hold each other, we hold the world, and the world holds us. Amen.
Last Saturday, I heard a thud. A chickadee had crashed into my kitchen window, and it lay motionless on its back on my patio, wings splayed. After a while, it repeatedly tried to right itself, unsuccessfully. Shortly, other chickadees gathered. First one came and left, and later another came. Each nudged it, chirping what seemed encouragement to turn over, but with no success. Each flew away. I was heartsick. The temperature was falling rapidly. The responsibility for putting this little bird out of its misery might fall to me. Just then, two chickadees arrived, and working together, they nudged the fallen bird. Each time it managed to get upright, it flapped its wings and landed on its back again, time and again. After a while, the pair disappeared. I thought the others had given up, and that it was dead, or it too had given up. Chickadees are courageous. They are the only birds that feed within a few feet of me in my backyard when I hang refilled feeders. On Saturday, the flock mates flew into the trauma, not away from it. They made themselves vulnerable in order to help. We say bird-brained, when perhaps we should say bird-hearted. Those of us with larger and ostensibly more fully developed brains are really not very good at making ourselves vulnerable in order to help someone who is emotionally injured. Many adults, including me, often say and do the darndest things when they find themselves in the eye of another person's storm that is filled with hurt, fear, anger, or grief. And instead of flying into the storm like the chickadees to stay with and be with us, they often retreat. They fly away. Now, as much as I know about social support academically, I personally have never been able to predict who will stay with me in the storm and who will retreat. My friend from Atlanta who offered to come and stay with me when I was having surgery for colon cancer flew into the storm. Others I expected to be there were nowhere in sight. Humans who fly away from emotional storms often have the best intentions. They want us to feel better, to move out of our pain and on with our lives. They mean well. But they often say and do the darndest things, things that exacerbate the pain rather than facilitate healing. They retreat from our emotional pain using predictable communication patterns that often leave us feeling defensive, which only prolongs our storm. First, people pretend like no storm exists. They may think incorrectly that not talking about it will make it go away, or talking about it will make the pain worse. This happened to me recently after my 14 and a half year old beloved dachshund Bailey died. She would have been 15 today. Totally ignoring my painful loss, my family made me feel like they didn't care, or that my loss wasn't important, or worse, not real. Second, people try to fix rather than accept our pain. They give us advice, they minimize, they say, you should get another dog, or things could be worse. Now, I always wonder, why don't people say things could be better? That would actually show some understanding. Third, like fortune tellers, people reassure us as if they have a fully functioning crystal ball. Things will get better. Or I promise you, you will find another boyfriend or spouse or job or minister or dog that you will love. When I broke up with my long-term boyfriend at age 19, my dad said there are more fish in the sea. Now, I was never much into fishing, and frankly, I didn't believe him. I knew he cared, but I felt misunderstood and alone. Fourth, because they know empathy is called for, people far too quickly say, I understand, or I know how you feel. Saying those things too quickly claims rather than actually shows understanding. I want to yell, how could you possibly understand? You haven't even heard my story. Saying I went through the same thing actually can show understanding, but it also can hijack your story as the conversation shifts from your pain to theirs. We fly away from another's emotional storm for numerous reasons. One is if we are present to another's pain, we risk feeling pain ourselves. Understanding requires us to accept the pain, to let it be, and that makes us vulnerable. Another reason is that we don't know what to do or say. Sylvia Boorstein advised, don't just do something, stand there. Make no mistake, this just standing there thing is hard work. But when we don't know what to say, we can be honest. We can say, I really don't know what to say. Or I really can't imagine how much this must hurt. Or I hear a lot of hurt, anger, fear, or grief. Humans cannot go over, under, or around emotional storms. The only way out is through the storm. And what we can do is stay with this person we care about, be with him, her, them, on the journey through the storm. The other chickadees had left. Time for me to be present. If it was still alive, I did not want the fallen chickadee to freeze to death. I grabbed a cardboard box with a lid and added a dish towel, hoping to provide some comfort, and then went out and gently placed the chickadee in the box. It had unspeakably soft feathers. It was alive, clinging fiercely to a small bit of branch and sitting askew. I brought it into the warm house. It was time for me to just stand there, to be with it. I waited. Time passed. I waited. Finally, I took the box out onto the patio steps. The chickadee was standing upright on its feet, bright-eyed, looking chipper. And suddenly, it flew up and out and into a tree 10 yards away, landing 15 feet above the ground, and from there it took off into the wild beyond. In those moments, I went from heartsick to elated and drifted into wonder. I wondered at the strength and wisdom of the crashed chickadee who had waited out the effects of trauma until it could take care of itself. I wondered at the vulnerability of the other chickadees who risked spending a lengthy time on the patio in order to help. Social work researcher Brené Brown tells us that vulnerability is not weakness, but rather a measure of courage. She says, to support each other in the process of becoming real is perhaps the greatest single act of daring greatly. May we be bird-hearted like those little chickadees.
I was thinking recently about the tragedy of King Lear. That doesn't happen every day, it just came up. At the climax of the play, Lear walks out into a storm, screaming with fury and rage, becoming one with a storm. As Lear rages, the storm rages. He shouts, "Blow, winds, and crack your cheeks, rage, blow." And he is the storm. There's no calm in the center of Lear's storm, nor any other part of that play. For a few minutes in Act Three, there is a man and a storm, and they embody each other. A few mornings ago, I walked into a storm that barely showed itself, but it was clearly there. In my neighborhood, the first tornado alarm sounded at 5:37 in the morning. I'm not from tornado country, and I thought, new experience, oh boy. That was not my first thought, but I went outside to experience a new sensation. What, you're not supposed to do that? It was calm. There was no rage, there was no center, there was no wind at that moment. What there was the eerie sound of storm sirens in the distance, making me feel like the Germans were really mad and they were bombing us now. It was the only relationship I had with that sound was air raid sirens. There was an unusual warmth in the air, and for a moment, this strange atmospheric pressure that reminded me of a singular day in my childhood. On this morning, though, it seemed certain that a storm was occurring, just not right there. It was close, but it wasn't surrounding me. It was just nearby. I returned to bed and attempted to sleep, and the wind arrived, and rain fell, slanted and hard. I would have been happy to sleep amidst that wind and rain. I find it comforting. The recurring tornado alarm was exquisitely well-timed to make sure I would stay awake. So as new experiences go, it's left a lot to be desired. I'm grateful, of course, that nothing horrible happened, and I certainly understand the need for early warning systems, and they're impressive that they work at all, as so many things are. Nevertheless, it felt like false advertising. The third or fourth time that alarm sounded, I thought of Chicken Little running around insisting the sky would fall. And I was like, really, just relax. Take it somewhere else. And then I thought, no, bring it on. Let's see what you have to work with. And that didn't happen. My new experience of a Midwest tornado in the middle of the night was not very impressive, and there's a good chance I will not file it away as a powerful memory. That afternoon in my childhood, though, that's never leaving. That memory is all about existential fear and making meaning out of life. I must have been in fourth or fifth grade. It was a school day, much like any other. I rode my bike home after school. It was just a little over a mile away. No one was home, which was unusual, but not alarming. I think they had left a vague note, be back soon kind of thing, but I'm not sure if that part of my memory is true. The world is shaped differently in Boise, Idaho, than it is here. There are large mountains on the north side of the town and three different levels of the city. I grew up on the middle level, one large step above the river where the whole thing began. Downtown and the oldest houses and the Chinese gardens and tunnels and the state capitol are all down on the level with the river. My level was called the first bench, and there's no way to get there anywhere without climbing up out of the river valley. To the south, there is a second bench. These are just like they were put there as big steps. Another maybe 100-foot rise in elevation, and it subtly segues into the northernmost portion of the Great Basin Desert that is Nevada and part of Utah. And from my house, looking north out the kitchen window, the mountains tower over the river valley. 16 miles of winding road climb from downtown to the top of the highest mountain, where I used to go skiing. That was my view most days when I got home, but on this particular day, the dark clouds roiling in the sky were more significant. Between me and the mountain, these heavy, textured clouds rolled like slowly boiling soup, dark enough to be absorbing all the light of the day. The atmospheric pressure felt similar to being near the tornado the other morning. And at 5:30 in the morning, the darkness around was as it should be. It should not have been dark in the middle of the afternoon in Boise, Idaho on that day in my childhood. The family dog, a little poodle named Mickey, was also absent, which was odd. So it was me, on my own, in an unexpectedly dark and odd space. I climbed up on the kitchen counter. I never did that. I climbed up there and I hugged myself. I hugged my knees, and I think I was rocking. I was feeling isolated, and I felt loss rolling around inside me like the storm clouds outside. The clouds were sucking the life from the town, but these feelings were sucking the life from my soul, it seemed. My hometown and I were in the eye of the storm, and it was calm, but not calm. The combination of qualities invited the growing despair I felt in my young self. Every nightmare I'd ever had about losing my family was running through my mind. Every feeling I'd ever had when my mom was suddenly hospitalized or suddenly sick at home was joined by the feeling of not seeing my dad very often because he would leave so early and get back so late, which was entirely a choice he made willfully to be anywhere except home. Now, I wasn't a frequent crier at that age. I had already learned not to cry, and someday I may tell you how I recovered from that. I saved it up for later in life. But I know on that day, as I felt with a certainty that I would lose everyone I was trying to love and be loved by, that I was crying alone, holding myself tightly. I was afraid to close my eyes for fear that what I had in the world would go away. It occurs to me that there is indeed a type of calm in the eye of the storm, but it's a creepy kind of calm. And importantly, you may be in the calm eye of the storm, but you're still surrounded by storm on all sides. It's not a great place to hang out. The wind picked up just before my mom came home, as if she was blown in by the wind. I guess she often carried a storm around with her, but what I remember about that day was that I was still huddled on the kitchen counter when she came in. I'm certain that I haven't really conveyed my experience adequately in these few minutes, and I'm more certain that I could not explain myself to my mom on that day. Somehow, she did get the idea that I was terrified of something, and I know I didn't tell her that I was afraid that she and my dad would die too soon, but I did convey that I was afraid somehow and that I was sad, which must have oozed out of me. And she did something completely out of character on that day. This is a bigger singularity than the storm. She just listened. She let me blubber or stammer or whatever I was doing to try to explain myself, and she didn't attempt to correct me or interrupt me or placate me with platitudes. And she also made me a cup of cocoa. I learned a couple things on that day, nearly 50 years ago. There was a real storm in Boise that day, unusually fierce. The first in my life that was that intense. I couldn't see the sky all around me. I was only looking to the north. And in reality, my town was surrounded, and I was genuinely in the eye of a very large storm for a while. I learned that my parents believed it best to open a window in the house during such storms in order to keep the inside and outside air pressure similar. This had something to do with the notion that the windows got blown out of the house, but no, they get sucked out of the house. It's an air pressure thing. Now, I have avoided thinking about whether that makes sense or not, because it came from that day, and I want to leave it in my mind as much as I want to leave a memory in my heart of the most motherly moment I ever had with my mom. I learned to never underestimate the power of listening and a cup of cocoa. If not for that singular afternoon, I would be hard-pressed to come up with a memory of my mom that embodied kindness in any way. Every time in the decades since that storm, every time I successfully listen has been a way I make sense and value of my own life, all informed by that one day. Every time I help a person, sometimes myself, often myself, equalize the pressure between inside me and the world, it's such a relief. Each of those times is like getting out of that creepy pseudo-calmness that we think is a gift of some kind and being a companion as we move right through the other side of the storm. You can't just stand there. When the tumultuous times of life arrive, as they will, we live well by hanging on to each other. Lear had quite a transformation in his storm, at first seeming to be directing the storm, creating the storm, being of the storm, but ultimately accepting help to guide him to a humble shelter. He had been a king, a powerful king, and it was all coming apart, and he says, "Okay, I am cold myself. Where is this straw, my fellow?" And he realizes he's the king looking for some straw to curl up in to stay warm. He says, "The art of our necessities is strange that can make vile things precious. Come, take me to your hovel." But it's probably not great to draw parallels with King Lear. It was quite the tragedy. There's no happy ending. In case you don't know the story, everyone dies. Instead, from Wisława Szymborska, my favorite Polish poet, this was called "Into the Dark," "Into the Ark." They rhyme. "Into the Ark. An endless rain is just beginning. Into the Ark, for where else can you go? You poems for a single voice, private exaltations, unnecessary talents, surplus curiosity, short-range sorrows and fears, eagerness to see things from all sides. Rivers are swelling and bursting their banks. Into the Ark, all you chiaroscuros and halftones, you details, ornaments, and whims, silly exceptions, forgotten signs, countless shades of the color gray, play for play's sake, and tears of mirth. As far as the eye can see, there's water and a hazy horizon. Into the Ark. Plans for the distant future, joy in indifference, admiration for the better man, choice not narrowed down to one of two, outworn scruples, time to think it over, and the belief that all of this will still come in handy someday. Or the sake of the children that we still are. Fairy tales have happy endings. That's the only finale that will do here, too. The rain will stop. The waves will subside. The clouds will part. in the cleared up sky, and they'll become once more what clouds overhead ought to be, lofty and rather lighthearted in their likeness to things, drying in the sun, isles of bliss, lambs and cauliflowers and diapers in the sky. Rabindranath Tagore ends my words with, clouds come floating into my life, no longer to carry rain or usher storm, but to add color to my sunset sky. So may it be. Storm, dear friends, go forth, carry the light of love inside you, and let it leak out every pore into the thirsty and dark world. We need each other more than ever. Go in peace, return in love.